Good morning, Prince George and points around the compass. This is your Uncle Don, and the show is Uncle Don Reads the Comics on CFUR, Canada's favorite university radio. We're broadcasting on 88.7 and on cable 101.5. God only knows how you get it from the internet. I'm an old Luddite, and I don't know. This is the 11th of September, a date that may resonate with some of you. There's been a lot of fuss leading up to this date. Before I start the regular programming, I want to talk about paranoia. Yesterday at about noon, I had a phone call from a woman who identified herself as being with Canada Post Security. There had been a complaint from an employee because of a small sticker that I had been putting on outgoing envelopes for some weeks now. This reads, "This is a suspicious letter. Be a good scout and report this to the Terrorist Information and Prevention System. Tips. Today." It seems that the Canada Post is without a sense of irony or humor. They are still looking for monsters under the bed. Lighten up, Canada Post. Public service announcement. As you will know if you've been following Uncle Don programs, I invited George Bush to join me here today for a discussion of the nasty things that I've been saying about him. He has not replied, nor is the campus overrun by the official paranoids of his Secret Service, so I infer that he will not be making it today. If he should show up, I will interrupt my prepared show to fit him in. On a related note, the noon protest today has been moved from the Agora to the UNBC entrance on University Way. I asked the campus security officials whether it would be all right to burn George Bush in effigy at the protest. An officer told me he did not care where we burned the son of a bitch as long as it was off campus. I still ask everyone to bring a British, Canadian, or American flag for the conflagration. No nylon, please, as it drips burning goo. Safety first. War on Terrorism. Exactly 1 year ago today, the World Trade Center was reduced to scrap. If you're tired of hearing tearful stories of the heroism and suffering of the American people on that day, you have tuned into the right station. You won't hear more of that from me. If you want endless memorials and speeches about how terrible it was that poor, innocent America was attacked by madmen, change the station now or run off to bingo. For those who want an excuse to wear those yellow ribbons or whatever the hucksters are pushing as symbols of commemoration today, try thinking of the other disaster on 11 September. I refer to the one that has been overshadowed by last year's events. This was the 11th of September, 1973, when General Pinochet, his American corporate allies, and the CIA overthrew the democratic government of Chile, killing the elected president, El Salvador Allende. The resulting dictatorship killed, tortured, and exiled tens of thousands of Chileans while destroying a model democracy in Latin America. The rich, the corporations, and the military did very well out of this dictatorship, but the country will probably never recover. This is the event that should be remembered on this date, as it was planned and executed with a complicity of the United States of America, and they have never expressed any regrets. Another conspiracy theory. Have you tired of all the conspiracy theories going around? Well, here's another one that I think you will find fresh. Sources in Germany have revealed that this whole 9/11 thing began as a publicity stunt by the Porsche car company to publicize their 9/11 model automobile. It started with an idea floated in a company seminar. At first, they wanted to hang a banner, Greenpeace style, on one of the World Trade Center towers on the date 9/11. From there, they brainstormed the idea, and according to a company spokesman, it kind of got out of hand. You know how these creative types can think out of the box when they get together. You heard it first from Uncle Don. It may sound wacky, but not as wacky as some conspiracy theories. All of the theories I have seen floated on the internet have one thing in common. They all assume that the attacks in New York and Washington were sponsored or abetted by a large secret organization on one side or the other of the oceans. A large conspiracy, like anything else, has a strong tendency to develop leaks. This is the problem with so many conspiracy theories, like the ones around the Kennedy assassination. People have other loyalties or just loose tongues. I cannot believe that the hundreds of men imprisoned in the United States or Guantanamo had knowledge of this particular plot. There are other reasons for rounding these men up and keeping them incommunicado. This is a form of terrorism itself. Suppose, just suppose, that it was a stunt, nothing more than a protest writ large. This was not an attack on all American values, North American values, of course, so that Canada can feel a part of the action. We don't know their motives, as the 19 men, if we are to believe the number handed to us, who performed this stunt are dead. They aren't talking. and the many hundreds of men rounded up in the States, Afghanistan, and around the world don't know anything or aren't talking either. The targets of these perpetrators were two striking symbols of American empire. The Twin Towers represented the economic empire and the Pentagon the military empire. There were 19 men who were so angry at the American empire that they threw away their lives for a symbolic protest. A stunt, according to the Random House Dictionary, is any remarkable feat performed chiefly to attract attention. Terrorism is the use of violence and threats to intimidate or coerce, especially for political purposes. If we cease talking about a terrorist act and think of in terms of an elaborate stunt, we will be better able to put this in perspective. Remember that the airplane hijackings and suicidal attacks were not preceded by any threats, nor were there any attempts to intimidate or coerce. The intimidation was generated internally by the U.S. government and media building up layers of hype. If this had been treated as a concerted criminal act, the reactions could have been more rational. But rational reaction would not have served the other agendas that were behind the actions of governments during the past year. Hijacking several airliners simultaneously is a one-time trick. They won't catch the airport security or airline security sleeping like this again, nor would they try. Supposing that this is part of an elaborate ongoing plot serves many interests in the United States, but protection of the population from future attacks is not one of them. Life is cheap there. If the United States government were so concerned about American lives, there are many more cost-effective ways to make their lives secure than by pouring money into so-called homeland security. We have to look behind the smokescreen of the war on terror for other motives of this Bush regime. War on terror again. Let us recall that there were 19 men involved in the four hijackings a year ago. 15 were Saudi citizens. They are all dead. These are the facts that we are purported to know. These facts came out early in the last year. Since then, we have been drenched in speculation and propaganda, but few new facts. I've been duped by the government propaganda so many times that I doubt almost everything, and you should too. Remember the Kuwaiti babies that were reportedly thrown out of incubators by the Iraqi soldiers? This was one of the excuses for the first war against Iraq. This was later exposed as a hoax, sponsored by Hill Knowlton, an American public relations firm, on behalf of the Kuwaiti government. Remember that Gulf of Tonkin incident? This was Lyndon Johnson's excuse for bombing Hanoi during the Vietnam War. It was also later exposed, but the damage had been done and the war was on. We can dig up examples at least as far back as the sinking of the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor for incidents that were used as excuses for retaliation. There may have been accomplices left alive, and there may not. Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden or any number of others may have been involved in this stunt, but I'm not about to take any government's unsubstantiated word for it as an excuse for waging war. Can the United States wage a war on terror with any hopes of winning? I would say no, not as long as the U.S. is seen by millions in the Third World as an oppressor and exploiter. American and Israeli arrogance are hatching future terrorists every day. The Americans are supposedly trying to fight a war on drugs by going to the source of those drugs overseas. But rather than address the source of terrorists overseas, this new war on terror is looking to security at home. If they were serious about eliminating terrorism, they would be analyzing their foreign relations to ascertain what they are doing that makes so many people so angry that they will throw their lives away in protest. Does the U.S. really intend to have a war on terror? Is this just another in a string of so-called wars that rally support for the current rulers, only to fade away with time when other hidden agendas are achieved? Within living memory, we have seen wars against poverty, organized crime, cancer, drugs, and God knows what else. None of them have been designed to win, but only to curry support. What has this purported war accomplished so far? It has instilled fear and suspicion in the citizens of Western countries. Invasions of privacy that would not have been tolerated a year ago are now institutionalized. The Internet is now open to intrusion and spying, not just in the United States, but also in Great Britain, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Denmark, and India that I know of. Watch for more countries taking advantage of this war to monitor their citizens. As for me, I'm writing more real paper letters these days. If they're going to read my communications, I will make them work at it. The United States has also initiated its Erie Terrorism Information and Prevention System, or TIPS, that aims to recruit citizen spies to watch their neighbors and report to a central authority. Shades of 1984. Will the Americans all have to wonder whether the people they deal with in their homes, schools, stores, libraries, and on the street are spying on them and reporting what they say or read? This sounds like East Germany with its Stasi spies. The FBI is demanding to have access to library records to find out who has been checking out certain books. Is this what we face in the future in Canada? Is CSIS doing this now? This war has curried racist feelings against Arabs and Muslims. Just what we need in our society, more racism. It has directed the attention of the citizens from the real problems in our society, like huge unmanageable debts, governmental, corporate, and private. It has taken people's attention from the huge corporate crime wave and the involvement of Bush, Cheney, and other government officials in the looting of companies. Remember the magician's method. Watch this hand, he says, while his other is in your pocket. The war has rallied support for vastly increased spending on security and war preparations, which benefits war industries and the military establishment. The much ballyhooed budget surplus that Bush used as an excuse to give tax reductions to the rich has now disappeared, while the tax cuts remain. Now massive U.S. government deficits have been predicted for several more years. The surplus that Paul Martin achieved in Canada is also disappearing fast. War in Afghanistan. The planners in the United States government supported the warlords in the 80s who were attacking the Soviet-friendly government of Afghanistan. The Taliban and the warlords were supplied with weapons, training, and money by the United States. The U.S. exulted when the Soviets responded to the provocations of this group by invading Afghanistan. The Americans called this the Afghan trap, and it succeeded beyond their dreams, leading the Soviets to wallow in that poor country for years, bleeding wealth and soldiers to the Afghans' guerrilla war. This war was an important factor in causing the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now these clever buggers in the U.S. have planted both feet firmly in their own trap. The Americans have destroyed a government that was nasty but functioning. They have left a vacuum that is filled with feuding warlords who have been bought off in the short run to form a coalition with the facade of democracy. When the American support is withdrawn, the coalition will collapse into tribal warfare. These warlords are the same guys who destroyed Kabul and most of the country with their fighting before the Taliban took over. It looks like all of this recent killing and destruction just resulted in replacing one bunch of bastards with another bunch of bastards at astronomical expense. But the Americans did accomplish one tangible thing. They have assurance that they can build that pipeline they wanted to transport Central Asian oil through Afghanistan, thus avoiding going through Iran. For this, thousands of Afghans were killed and a shattered country was further punished. When the democratic facade does collapse, we can expect to see an American occupation army entrenched in Afghanistan for many years, to protect the pipeline, of course, not to protect the people from the warlords. The U.S. has a history of entering wars with great promises of reconstruction when it is over. Under the pressures of the Cold War, the United States did make great efforts to rebuild Western Europe after World War II. They've been drawing on the goodwill created by the Marshall Plan for decades now, but that precedent is wearing thin with age. In its smaller wars since World War II, when the smoke cleared, the U.S. lost interest in the enemy country and promised aid has did not materialize. Thus it was in Vietnam, Nicaragua, Panama, and a number of other countries. So it will be in Afghanistan. The United States made a huge leap of logic in reacting to the stunt of the suicide hijackings by supporting the attack on Afghanistan. None of the hijackers were Afghans, nor there was no proof that bin Laden had been involved, nor is there now. Bluster on dubious videotapes does not convince me. If bin Laden had managed to plan an elaborate operation like this from a cave halfway around the world, it would have been a feat of incredible proportions. And if bin Laden did plan this operation, and if he was hiding in Afghanistan, this would seem to call for a police operation rather than a military one. The U.S. snubbed world opinion and international law by attacking Afghanistan. It has set a precedent that rolls back carefully crafted international cooperation by decades, if not centuries. The Taliban once offered to deliver bin Laden to the United States if the U.S. could offer convincing evidence that he had engineered the attack. But this offer was dismissed by the U.S. It seems that the U.S. intended to attack Afghanistan no matter what the government did there or whether they could catch bin Laden. Probably George Bush's worst fear was that bin Laden would be captured before American bombers could crush the Taliban. It was reported that Bush's daddy had the same fears when Saddam Hussein offered to pull his troops out of Kuwait just before the American invasion was launched a decade ago. Bush Sr. wanted to attack Iraq and would brook no accommodation that would prevent it. The war on Iraq. Bush has stretched the orchestrated fury of the American people to the point where he thinks he can do anything he wishes. He has declared that you are either with us or against us. He has announced that some 60 or so countries are not with him and are therefore legitimate future targets for American military power. He has singled out North Korea, Iran, and Iraq as an axis of evil. This assertion is ridiculous on its face. Iran and Iraq are bitter enemies, and North Korea is isolated on a peninsula thousands of kilometers away. George Bush is relying on the fabled geographic ignorance of the American people to avoid the public ridicule that he richly deserves. Until 1990, Saddam Hussein was America's boy. He was always a bastard, but the Americans supported him in Iraq's war against Iran that cost both countries hundreds of thousands of dead. In fact, the U.S. gave support to both sides in that war, hoping that they would exhaust themselves and allow American domination of their depleted societies. When George Bush Sr. waged war on Iraq to restore democracy in Kuwait, a claim ridiculous on its face, he stopped short of going all the way to Baghdad and toppling the government. He wisely avoided leaving a power vacuum that would either be filled by neighboring states, including the dreaded Iran, moving in to carve up the spoils, or the prospect of an American occupation. Experts figured that an occupation would have required a force of at least 250,000 soldiers and administrators for a minimum of 10 years. But Baby Bush seems to be ready to take on the burden of an occupation. One prominent senator has said that this is possible and that the costs of occupation could be deducted from oil revenues. The oil industry of Iraq would, he said in passing, naturally have to be run by Americans until this reconstruction is completed. Well, there it is. Iraq would become an American puppet in the Middle East, and American corporations would run the oil industry, ostensibly as a trust whose profits would benefit the people of Iraq. Saudi Arabia has become unreliable in American eyes. The occupation of Iraq, the country sitting on the world's second largest known pool of oil, would give a balance to the Saudis' economic power to their massive oil pool. One thing that seems to be disregarded in the discussion of the prospects of an American invasion of Iraq is the fact that the war has already begun. In fact, the first Persian Gulf War never ended. Sanctions placed on Iraq have killed over 1 million citizens over the last decade, and the bombing of the so-called no-fly zones in the north and south have continued unabated. Supposedly, these bombings have been to protect the Kurds in the north and the Shia minority in the south. Actually, the bombings have not just attacked military targets, but the overflights have allowed for detailed military intelligence, which makes planning for the coming invasion quite easy. For the United States, the coming attack on Iraq would be like shooting fish in a barrel, until it comes time for occupation. How will they control millions of angry, resentful Iraqis? Well, there's a clue in recent news that there were American military observers present during the Israeli invasion and destruction of Jenin. Do they plan to rule with bombs and bulldozers? Don't put anything past them. They are the superpower, and after all, God is on their side. Watch for the Americans to manufacture a pretext for attacking Iraq. Maybe they will manipulate the Security Council into passing a resolution that will give the U.S. weasel room to interpret authorization to attack. Maybe they will concoct a Gulf of Tonkin-style incident to which they can react defensively. Maybe they will just go in without any justification at all. But we know that Bush and his cohort Cheney want war against Iraq very badly. In conclusion, I believe that this stunt a year ago is being used as an excuse for a phony war on terrorism. The government actions of the last 12 months were planned well before the last 11th of September, both within the United States and without. The so-called USA Patriot Act is a lengthy wish list of the establishment that must have been composed long ago. The FBI, CIA, and other elements of the security apparatus applaud their expanded powers now, and that now infringe on the rights of citizens and have supposedly been enshrined in their Bill of Rights. The President has usurped the power of Congress to declare war and of the judiciary to determine the guilt of citizens. I've long held that there's been a silent, creeping military coup in the United States that goes back for decades. George Washington warned against the standing army. Eisenhower warned against the power of the military-industrial complex. Both warnings were dismissed, and the results have come to flower in the 21st century. It seems that the coup in the United States is like no other in history. The facade of democracy has remained, but behind the scenes, power has been transferred from the people to the corporations and the military. Oh yes, the people can still vote, but what are the real chances, choices that they are allowed? Popularly elected lower-level officials can control peripheral matters, but when it comes to the important offices, the voters are offered candidates Tweedledee and Tweedledum. No one can be nominated without the backing of big money and the corporate media. No wonder half of the American electorate finds other things to do on Election Day than cast meaningless votes. Real power is concentrated in the upper class and the corporations. It is not vulnerable to being grasped again, if it ever was, by the people. I want to reiterate here what a lot of people out there believe. The attacks of last year were more a stunt than a serious attack on our society. The subsequent legislation has been designed to limit our freedoms and privacy rather than increase security. The wars on Iraq, Afghanistan, and God knows where else are a cover for the expansion of the American empire. If you feel strongly for or against this conclusion, write to me. I will deal with any correspondence on the air. Beware. Write to Uncle Don, care of CFUR Radio, 3333 University Way, Prince George, B.C., V2N4Z9. This is CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. Business as usual. Today, as every day over the past months, hucksters will be making big bucks, hawking souvenirs and guiding tours of Ground Zero in New York. The 8-story hole in the ground is now big business. It seems to be a characteristic of our society that there's always a crew out there ready to make a dollar from disaster. Soupy rubbish. A friend in Hawaii sent me the following soupy piece of rubbish making the rounds of the internet. He sent it as a bad example, not because he thought it was undying literature. It goes as follows. September 11, 2002 is soon approaching. On that day, please wear red, white, and blue to work or school to show your support for those who lost their lives on 9/11/01 and to honor the heroes who worked to save them and their families left behind. At noon your time on September 11, 2002, no matter where you are or what you are doing, stop, put your hand on your heart, and say the Pledge of Allegiance out loud or to yourself, or say a prayer for our nation. If all of us do this together in every time zone around the world, we will have a powerful chain of thoughts surrounding us. Please keep this going to your friends and family. By September 11, 2002, hopefully enough people will have read this and will join together in unity. God bless the USA. My perspective. I figure that the victims of the World Trade Center suicide attacks have had more than their share of sympathy and bad verse. I won't add my bit to the heap. Okay, a couple of thousand people died on that day and their deaths were nasty, but I want to put it in perspective. I'm wearing black, white, and green for the thousands of innocent people who have been methodically murdered in Afghanistan since Bush began his war against that poor land. These thousands have not been killed by a handful of fanatics, but they have been methodically exterminated by the most powerful nation on the planet. The justification has been that the 19 men, none of them Afghans, pulled off an audacious terrorist act. By what right does Bush overthrow the government of Afghanistan? No one liked the Taliban, but it appears that the men who are being groomed to take over the government there are not a notch better. The country has been ruled by warlords since Christ rode a bicycle, and Bush's minions are not going to change that with B-52s. The fantasy that the American good guys can throw the nasty Taliban out and install a democracy is just that, fantasy. Democracy needs fertile ground and decades, if not centuries, to develop. Fact and fiction. We cannot make sense out of the events of the last year without sorting the fact from the fiction. When we take the facts as pieces of a jigsaw puzzle and look at them in the light of history, we have a chance to discern a pattern. This pattern can form the basis of a hypothesis that can then be tested. When we watch a magician, one of the tricks that catches us is misdirection. Watch this hand. Meanwhile, the other hand is in your pocket. Are we being set up like this? Remember, there are a lot of people paid a lot of money to direct our attention to the other hand. Public relations specialists work with every large organization and government agency. Leaks are orchestrated and press releases prepared. Not only are lazy journalists lulled into reporting press releases as news, but almost all news outlets are owned by large corporations which have their own vested interests to look after. Beyond that, there is a class issue. Large news organizations are owned by rich people. With few exceptions, rich people share a class-based neoconservative view of politics, and they hire those who reflect their views. We're exposed to news as filtered or fabricated by these people. Question everything. First question, is Bush really in charge, or is he a lightning rod for others? Son of a Bush is easy to criticize and ridicule. I've done my share of it, and I am not through yet. But is he just a dummy parroting what his handlers tell him? If he were not a holder of an MBA from Harvard, I would dismiss him as stupid. He certainly has a good act. Second question, if Bush is not in charge, who is? Here we get into a web of conspiracy theories that run the gamut from the more reasonable assumptions, such as that Bush's daddy is taking a second shot at the presidency by proxy, right off to the lunatic fringe, which has evidence that Bush Jr. is an alien right off a flying saucer. I personally think that looking behind the curtain to see who is pulling the strings is futile and unproductive. Rather than look for conspiracies or controls, I believe that it is more productive to look at who benefits from the actions of the Bush regime. I will make this proposal the proposal that is the military-industrial complex. When George Bush left the presidency of the United States, he gave a farewell address in which he warned the American people of the dangers he perceived in maintaining a standing army. The Constitution made provisions for a citizen's militia, hence the provision for the right to bear arms, and it was assumed the regular army was unnecessary and wasteful. Fast forward to Dwight Eisenhower in his farewell address in 1961. By then, the United States had a huge standing army, of which I was a part. Eisenhower warned the American people about what he perceived as a military-industrial complex. He perceived this as a combination of ambitious military officers working together with the armaments industry to enrich themselves at the expense of their country and world peace. Dwight was no fool. As a brilliant general in World War II, he knew how the military worked. As president for 8 years, he knew how the government worked. People who dismissed his warnings were fools. Well, the U.S. has had a huge standing Army, Navy, and Air Force since the last World War. Now they even boast of a space command. The military-industrial complex has become so broad that it now encompasses a huge portion of the American economy and social structure. Large sections of U.S. business are driven by military spending, and the war industries have cleverly diversified their operations so that no congressional district is without its military bases and or war industries. Any proposed cuts are fought bitterly by those who have their noses in the trough. But don't just take what I say at face value. Look at the time of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Everyone was celebrating the fact that we no longer faced an imminent nuclear war, and we could now use the vast amounts of money that had been wasted on the military spending to create a paradise on Earth. This was the much ballyhooed peace dividend. So where did that peace dividend go? Suddenly the establishment saw the danger for them in dismantling their great investments in war, so they popped up a previously unnoticed army of terrorists out there against whom we must arm ourselves. It was a bit of a stretcher to proclaim that the Americans needed 30,000 nuclear bombs to fend off terrorists with pipe bombs or homemade explosives, but they gave it their best shot. If you want to milk money out of the American people, all you have to do is scare them. Well, that's it for Uncle Don Reads the Comics this 11th of September 2002. Watch out for terrorists, folks. Tune in next week to CFUR 88.7 at 11:30 a.m. for Uncle Don. Guess that'll take care of the little bastards for another week.